A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're talking about your savings goals. What should they be? How do you get there? And is there anything that can help you along the way? Joining me today is Susan Spears. She is the CEO of UACPA. Also joining us today is Tad Tuttle, a partner with Hinton Burdick, and Chad Lambert, the manager of Hinton Burdick. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So I'm not sure who exactly is the best expert on saving goals, but Tad, I'm going to start with you, put you in the hot seat first. If we are trying to save money, is there any specific thing we should be saving toward? I mean, you know, is it the big bright red Lamborghini I should have in my driveway?
That's maybe your saving goal. But yeah, most of us are going to have maybe something a little more down to earth, I would think. So, you know, it's interesting. As I thought about financial goals, I think you can take these things a myriad of places. But when I think of financial goals, I think the most important thing is for people to really ask themselves, you know, what are my financial goals? Because I think they can be so many things. And the way that, you know, with us dealing with money on a regular basis, I think we tend to see trends in money, and it's, in my opinion, become a pretty big problem with people chasing financial goals that either aren't healthy or they're chasing things with no goals at all. And so to me, when you think of a financial goal, the first thing that comes to my mind is asking yourself, you know, what are those goals? And I'll maybe let Chad pipe in here in a minute as well, but for me, when I think of a goal, I don't want financial goals to become just another goal. Life is full of goals. I feel like we all feel like we're chasing a number of things. And, you know, before this, we were talking about burnout, right? And this is just kind of a lifelong problem for everyone. There's very little time. Everybody feels like they're just too busy to do anything, you know? And so we become so busy that we don't actually end up accomplishing very many of our goals. And so, you know, once you kind of ask yourself, hey, financially, what do I really want to accomplish? You really need to break those down into the old typical short, mid, and kind of long-term goals, you know, because I think you have to have a vision of what you're going to shoot for.
Do you think that some people mistake material goals for financial goals? Because if my goal is to get that big red Lamborghini, that's a materialistic goal, but I'm going to suffer financially trying to get it if I'm not making enough money to pay for the car.
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting. My goal to get a Lamborghini in my car is to go find the neighbor that has one and ask them if they'll park it in the driveway for a minute. I just, you know, before we really jump or I guess dive in deep into anything with financial goals, I think truthfully some of the biggest problems with finances, with money, with people's money goals is everybody wants that shiny red Lamborghini in your example right now. They want it in their driveway and they just are not in a position. They're not in a position to buy it and be healthy in the long run. And so when you're looking at those financial goals, you want to make sure. So to me, you know, you kind of mentioned material versus, I guess, just financial goals in general. I think of financial goals as just security overall. And that might mean that, yes, eventually I can pay for that Lamborghini if that's part of that plan. But to me, it's living what I call financially free. You know, I know a lot of people, we call them the richest, the poorest rich people that we know, right? So they make just a ton of money, but at the end of the day, they spent every dime and they financed everything they have. And that to me, I don't want a Lamborghini in my driveway if it's going to be financed. Right. So anyway.
So Chad, how can you expand on that as to, I like the financial goals should be security. So what would security be as a financial goal?
I think it's interesting too. A lot of times people look at, you know, financial security as some specific number, like, well, you know, they want to hear you need $2 million to be able to retire or whatever that number is. I think that number is different for everybody because I think people have different ideas of financial security and what that means to them. It might mean being able to have the freedom to, you know, travel a lot. Some people might not want to travel. They just want to have what they need to live kind of the life that they're currently living and not have any concerns. So it can mean a lot of different things. You know, you ask 10 different people, they might give you 10 different answers really for what they want. And I think instead of focusing on a number and something specific, it's talking to people and really determining what's important to them and what they want to work towards. And then you can kind of build a plan around that and structure things in a way that allow them to do what they want to do and not just, you know, oh, if you have $1 million saved up, you're going to be able to do whatever, kind of depending on what the goals are and what their expectation is of security, then I think you build a plan that's going to be a little different. And it also is very important, if you have, let's say, a married couple, to have them kind of, you know, bring both of their goals to the table at the same time, because in many cases, they might think that they're aspiring for the same financial goals when in reality, they have very different pictures of what that's going to look like. One might want a red Lamborghini and the other one doesn't. So it's obviously good to have both sides throw out their ideas and kind of come to some, you know, they're going to have some separate goals, but there also has to be some consensus on, you know, kind of goals as a couple or a family that things you can focus on together that are going to get you to a place so you're not battling each other in order to accomplish these separate things. Some of them may be separate, but a lot of them obviously are going to have to be together, and you're going to kind of have to focus together to get to that point.
Susan, what do you think security is financially? I know there are, as Chad and Tad both said, it's different for everybody, but is there just like a baseline what means security for everybody?
I think it's pretty tough to define, and especially if you start looking, you know, we have a lot of research and we start talking security, you have to look at male security is different than female security. And I'll be one say, yeah, I like that security. It's very important that I'm financially secure. But what does that mean? I think that you have to dive a little deeper and start looking behaviorally. And as we talk about goals, are we talking about goals or are we talking about dreams? You know, oftentimes we talk about goals, especially from a financial sustainable standpoint. And we want to set smart goals. We want to be, you know, if we want that red Lamborghini in our driveway, we want to be specific. So let's just carry this down. You know, the specific goals, I want that red Lamborghini. Measurable would be the M. So, you know, how are we going to track that progress as we work towards that Lamborghini? And attainable, I mean, is a red Lamborghini really attainable, or are we going to have to be satisfied with a red budget car? Is it relevant? I mean, realistically, now some of it might be relevant that we have that red Lamborghini. Does it align with our values and the initiatives that we're carrying out in our lives? And then what's the timeline? Yeah, I want a red Lamborghini, but do I want it right now? As Tad had mentioned, we live in a society where everything's so instant. Or is it more realistic, if you will, that that red Lamborghini is 15, 20 years down the road? Because there are other things that have to be cemented in place as we set to do that. I mean, finance and financial goals are so loaded with behavioral and realistic aspects that it's really tough to say, you know, what is that financial security? It's really tough to define.
Okay, we do need to take a break. When we come back, I want to go into some of that behavior in terms of how do we reach our goals. Whatever those goals are, you do have to figure out how to get there. So we'll be right back with Tad Tuttle. He's a CPA and partner at Hinton Burdick. And Chad Lambert is a manager at Hinton Burdick. And we also have the CEO of UACPA, Susan Spears.
two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that if it affects your life in any way money-wise, we're talking about it. And today we're talking about setting financial goals. Joining me today is Tad Tuttle. He is a partner and CPA at Hinton Burdick. We also have Chad Lambert, a CPA and manager at Hinton Burdick, and Susan Spears, the CEO of Utah's Association of Certified Public Accountants. In that last segment, we just talked very general about what are financial goals and kind of if they are realistic or not, and that would really depend on your financial circumstance. But Susan, you had mentioned that a lot of this is behavioral. If people are trying to reach a certain goal, you have to save up enough money first off and be secure before you can start reaching like some of those outrageous dreams. So what does it take for people to change their behavior if they need to do that to reach their goals?
That's a tough one. It's a tough conversation because if we look at our financial behavior, it's often been set by the environment that we were raised in, if you will, and the environment that we surround ourselves with. So back to the red Lamborghini, if I'm hanging around with a lot of people that own these big fancy sports cars, the higher end stuff, there's going to be something that may just kind of embed in me that says, you know what, I'm really not worth it unless I have that red Lamborghini. So sometimes it takes a little conversation with our own selves, is sitting down saying, what is it that's really important to me? And what's realistic? But we also have to look at what are those little trigger points, if you will, that cause us to spend money maybe outrageously, you know, those impulsive buys. And you have to kind of start looking at all that kind of stuff and keep that in mind as we put a spending plan together. I know that often as our CPAs are working within their own organizations, whether they're on the industry side or the firm side, some people call them budgets. I call them spending plans because I think that you're in the driver's seat with a spending plan. You know, where you can draft that plan that says, if I want that red Lamborghini, this is what I'm going to have to do. And it's not just monetary. I mean, it's, you know, certainly we have income that's coming in every month from pay or investments or whatever. But sometimes there are some behavioral things that we may have to change to help us get there. You know, if I'm working a minimum wage job and I want that red Lamborghini, probably not going to get it. It's not really going to be attainable. But maybe if you need to change some behavior and get some education or go into it, you know, whether it's a trade or a profession or whatever, so that I have that income capability to help me get where I want to be.
Chad, if we build on that, let's say I have the minimum wage job, and I realize, hey, if I want my big goal in life, I need to get into a trade that will pay me $20, $25 an hour. What would be the next step after that? Let's say I'm in the job now and I can start saving money. Where do I put this money?
There's a lot of different places, obviously. Kind of depends on what the goal is. If it's something like that, a specific item like a Lamborghini, it's going to be more of just a structured savings type plan and like Susan said, more of a spending plan. So you're going to put away, you know, a certain amount every month. Obviously, the more you can do with that money, the biggest thing, like they say, is putting the money to work for you, right? So if you put that away into various investment accounts, things like that. It's pretty simple nowadays to invest, even in a basic mutual fund or index fund and things like that, that can compound your earnings, right? So if you're able to actually put that in somewhere that's relatively safe, you can also see that money grow. If it's just for kind of a purchase like that, obviously, if we're looking more toward retirement and things of that nature, then there's a lot of plans, 401ks, preferably, to, you know, if you do that through your employer or other IRAs or certain types of retirement accounts that are going to allow you to, you know, fund a certain amount each year. And depending on your income, can provide pretty large tax savings. If you're in a lower income bracket, you know, you're going to look at a Roth type plan. If you're in a higher income bracket, you're probably going to look at a more traditional plan. And we can look at some of those differences later if we want to dig into that. But I don't know that people often realize how much difference it can make if you do invest some of that money early on and just stay consistent, right? Sometimes we, kind of like we brought up already, we look for instant returns. We put money in and, you know, it's only grown a little bit over a year or so. But if we continually do that for 5, 10, 15 years, it can really compound and grow to a much larger amount than we really think if we just kind of think, well, it's not going to make a big difference if we're putting away $100 a month or a few hundred dollars a month. But if you invest that and that compounds over time, it does grow to a pretty significant amount. So it can make a large difference if you're putting that in the right places.
Tad, I'm going to build on Chad's example. If I get a higher paying job and I have enough money, I can actually start putting it away in savings or investing, whichever it is. If I get paid twice a month and I am able to put $50 away each paycheck, so that would be the $100 a month, is the first thing I should do is actually be saving toward the red Lamborghini? Is that where all that extra money should be going?
Yeah, that's a good question. The answer is no, right off. So I think you have to back up just a little bit. You know, when I think of financial goals, you've got to live on the playoff of that behavior, maybe that behavior concept, and I'm going to turn that into more of a mindset. So I firmly believe that people, if they want to live a lifestyle that's different than most later on, that means you have to live a lifestyle now that is different than most. And so what do I mean by that? You've probably heard of Dave Ramsey's comment of live unlike anyone now so I can live unlike anyone down the road, right?
Right.
The concept is really you have to, in my opinion, if that red Lamborghini is all you're focusing on, you're gonna miss the mark. I think you gotta back up, and I'm gonna speak to the vast majority of the world when I speak of this financial situation. Most people, if they evaluate themselves right now, they've got probably one vehicle or two vehicles that have a loan. If you did go to school, and let's say you're super excited that you went to school to get that degree, now you've got your job and you're thrilled, you're making 20, 25 bucks an hour or a salary, you know, a decent salary, you've got student loans. Many people are so excited about everything that they went and bought a new home. And so really, if you think about where people are now, most people are pretty laden with debt. And to me, Chad talked about the power of compound interest. The same thing works with debt, right? But it's the opposite. We're paying money that we could otherwise avoid. So to me, if we're trying to reach a long-term financially stable, financially free situation, you've got to start with the basics of getting out of debt. And that takes, at least in my opinion, that takes a mindset change. That means that we don't need, and not only do we not need, we cannot afford a red Lamborghini right now, period. You cannot afford it at the moment. So if you get blinded by these kinds of things, then you're going to miss the mark on the things that will build that financial foundation, which is making your money work for you and not you, you know. And as Susan mentioned, the telling your money where to go rather than it telling you where it's going to go type thing. So it really starts with setting up, you know, And I'm just going to go through a couple little bullets here, and then I'll let you maybe ask another question, Heather, on that. But to me, it really does start with the very basic thing is you got to have a little bit of cash in the bank to be able to fund things that are unforeseen, right? So you can't afford a red Lamborghini, which means most of us are going to be driving vehicles that have a few miles on them. If you're like me, I drive my cars for a long, long time. They're paid off, but I don't have a brand new car all the time. But when things come up, I've got an account that I can easily, you know, fix the brakes. I can change the oil. I can get new tires, all the things that are necessary because I have that emergency fund. So really, you do have to have that basic plan of the cash in place. And then before you start saving for that Lamborghini, now that I can address your specific question, you really got to start paying that debt off. So if you have debt, that cash in your example, if you had X number of dollars, whatever that looks like each month, that means you need to be putting that towards your debt. Before you think about the red Lamborghini, you absolutely have to, and this is a reality check for, I think, most of us, because we think we can sometimes afford that new big screen TV for, oh, that's, it used to be a $3,000. Now they're only like $800. That's cool. Well, that $800 could have gone to pay towards the debt, and you could have got a $300 television for now that works great. It's not as big as your neighbor's, and I'm sorry about that, but that's what you can afford at the time, you know? So that mindset of behavior and realizing kind of who we are and what we can really afford in our financial, true financial situation. Once that debt's paid off, then we can talk about the long-term investing, as Chad mentioned. We can talk about how much do we actually put away to be able to afford that Lamborghini down the road.
We have one more subject to touch, which would be retirement, but I want to do that right after this next break. So we'll be right back with CPAs Tad Tuttle, a partner at Hinton Burdick, and Chad Lambert, the manager at Hinton Burdick, and also Susan Spears, who is the CEO of UACPA. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're talking about financial goals. What are they and how do you get there? Joining me today is Tad Tuttle, a partner with Hinton Burdick, Chad Lambert, a manager at Hinton Burdick, and also Susan Spears, the CEO of UACPA. Tad, you had just wrapped up in the last segment talking about needing to get out of debt before you can start working on a big, flashy goal of the red Lamborghini we're using as our example. But I also think retirement funding is a huge one, a goal that people should have. How would people do that?
I kind of wish, as much as I love Lamborghinis, I kind of wish we had used an example of a shiny new Honda Civic or a Honda Accord, right? For the vast majority, because in my opinion, yes, there's people that can totally pay for that stuff, but I think we need to put things in check. But this comment's going to depend on where you are, right? So if you're in your 20s, the answer to this is going to be a lot different than, let's say, if you're in your mid 70s. And so, you know, one of the things I think you wanted to maybe cover a little bit were the concept of like a reverse mortgage. So maybe somebody that's closer into, you know, they're in retirement and they're maybe, I'll just call it on the downhill of life, you know, where they don't have the same earning potential as somebody that maybe is in their 20s. And so you have to figure out where you're starting from, right? So if you're in retirement, you've got nothing, but maybe a house, let's say, the reverse mortgage is going to be kind of one side of the fence. If you are in retirement, you have a house and you've got some savings, the reverse mortgage is maybe going to be on the other side of that. So what aspect of retirement do you want us to cover? Because we can take this a myriad of places.
If we're following the examples we've had up till now, if I started my saving goal, that would be one of the goals. But if I started saving late, if I concentrated mostly on materialistic things and I wind up in retirement with very little money, but I do own a home, which is sort of where a friend of mine is in. Her father is very ill and probably won't be living much longer, but the mother started a part-time job very late in life, like when she was in her late 50s. So her Social Security income will not be very much. And they just took out a second mortgage because they, for them, that was the only way they could afford living. So I assume in their case, that's good. But when would it be bad for somebody to take out a reverse mortgage?
Yeah, maybe I'm going to let Chad take this on. I know he and I have both looked into it just a little bit. So maybe, Chad, you want to give some comments?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely can be a great option for some people. In many cases, if it can be avoided, right, it's not something that it shouldn't be your first choice when we're looking at options. And, you know, if there's other income available, obviously we want to tap that in most cases first. There are specific circumstances where it can be a great fit. And obviously, if there are no other options, in many cases, that's what people have to tap into. So it can be something that can be very helpful for people that do have a home and maybe no other income or any other retirement savings. There, obviously, the home can provide a lot of security when you're taking out that reverse mortgage. You are kind of putting that home out there, right? And you're getting the benefit of all the equity. But obviously, when you get to some certain point, there's not going to be any value, you know, left in that home. You're kind of drawing that all out. So depending on the situation, it can, you know, it can be a good fit in this circumstance, like you mentioned, with no other options. That could obviously provide them some good steady income and kind of allow them to live for a certain period of time until, you know, maybe they can figure something else out. There are some provisions as well with reverse mortgages that, you know, that protect the borrower. There is a lien, just like a traditional mortgage, there's a lien placed on the home and you can kind of draw that out in different ways, lump sum or payments and whatnot. The interest kind of accrues there, but they're never really going to be upside down. If you want to look at it that way, you know, like if someone takes out a traditional mortgage on home for $500,000, and the home's only 5 years later, let's say it's worth $400,000, now they're on the hook for that difference, where in a reverse mortgage, they're really not going to have to come out of pocket for any reduction in value of the home. They'll kind of, the home basically is the collateral, and that will satisfy the debt there when it's sold or whatever the case may be. But they're not going to have to come out of pocket. They also, a reverse mortgage, they're not going to limit the amount. If it was originally set up for $500,000, and the value of the home goes down to $400,000. Since it's an FHA, you know, insured loan, they're not going to come back in the middle of the term and say, oh, we're only going to limit you to $400,000 because the fair market value of the home has gone down. So there's some protections in there for the borrower, and it can provide some steady cash flow and allow them to, you know, live life without as much worry. The big difference between a traditional mortgage, obviously, and the reverse is not having to pay anything out of pocket. Those payments and interest just kind of accrue to the balance. And so that obviously provides a lot of flexibility and benefit, not having to come up with anything out of pocket.
Maybe just one comment on that. So I have to say it's a mortgage still, right? So a traditional mortgage, we, of course, are taking a loan out, and then over time, we're paying on it. And each year, more and more of our payments going to principal, right? So the mortgage is going down. As the balance goes down, the interest goes down. Well, it's just the opposite with, of course, a reverse mortgage. As we tap into that equity, each year, more and more of our balance is basically accrued interest. And so I have to say, for me, if there's other ways to change your lifestyle to avoid having to maybe tap into some of this, that would obviously be preferable because you're still taking out debt. However, if you're going to do it, the one thing I would say is just make sure it's ideal for maybe when their interest rates are low and where there's just a ton of equity. You know, when people do have their house paid off completely, the goal would be making sure that you will outlive that term of the reverse mortgage, because you don't want to get into a situation where you've tapped out your house equity and then you don't have any more money and you can't figure out how to make a payment. So those are just some of the things I would say to be very careful with on the reverse mortgage side.
Susan, any thoughts on that and maybe wrapping everything up that we've talked about?
I think that both Chad and Tad have made some great points on these reverse mortgages. There's something to be taken seriously. they affect not only the current generation, the next generation, if you will, if we have to sell the house after the demise of the individual homeowner. Also, as far as the financial behavior, we've been talking about the mindset, the behavior. You know, set those SMART goals. Determine where it is you want, where it is you need to be, but be realistic as well. We live in a very instantaneous world, but really give some thought and put yourself in a place where you are financially secure to the best of your ability, and so we can have that financial sustainability.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We are out of time. My guests today are Tad Tuttle. He's a CPA and partner at Hinton Burdick, Chad Lambert, manager at Hinton Burdick, and the CEO of UACPA, Susan Spears. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.